Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is Deanna Fox, the new CEO of the New York Farm Bureau. She has a background in journalism, public affairs, and communications, and she brings a unique perspective to the role. She emphasizes the importance of listening to members, advocating for policies that support New York agriculture, and inspiring the next generation of farmers. We know Deanna from WAMC, of course. She's been on our Food Friday program. She has shared recipes and talked about her relationship with food and farms. And now you're on the Capital Connection as the head of the Farm Bureau. Welcome, Deanna Fox. Congratulations on the new position.
Yeah, thank you. It is quite a turn of events, but it's also very exciting. And it feels like the right place for me. So I'm excited to be there.
Yeah, I listened to a little podcast that you do there at the Farm Bureau. Yeah. I believe Steve Ammerman interviewed you. Yeah. And he brought up this unique set of skills that you bring to the job. So talk a little bit about those skills more for us and how you ended up applying and getting the CEO position at the Farm Bureau in New York.
Yeah, well, prior to me, there were two CEOs over the course of about 35 years who were both attorneys. And so they brought a litigation background, general counsel background to the position, and it was a very different outlook on the position than the future Farm Bureau. Me being in there, I don't have a legal background, but I have an entrepreneurial business, journalism, public affairs, public policy, communications background over the 20 plus years of my career, media relations, as we know. And it's definitely taken the organization in a different path, different avenue, because we're now more forward facing. We're less reactive. We're more proactive. And we're really in a time where we need to focus on growing. There's just natural farm attrition in New York State, as there is across the country. There's fewer farms growing food to feed people. And we need to be very, very vocal in making sure that we protect farms in the state.
There's so much there. I know part of what you did to begin the position was to listen, to go around to farms across the state and listen to what farmers are telling you. What'd you find out?
Oh, well, it doesn't matter what commodity you're working in, if you're a dairy farmer or you're a grains farmer, doing row crops, doing poultry, doing aquaculture, it really doesn't matter what you're doing. The needs are the same, really, in any part of the state, whether you're in Buffalo or the North Country or Long Island. There's a lot of regulation in New York State, which makes it hard to farm. New York isn't always a very agricultural friendly state, and it's gotten progressively less friendly, I think, with some changes in politics. So people need more help. They need people to understand what farming is, what agriculture is, what the makeup of farms in New York State are. 99% of the farms in New York State are multi-generational family farms. Some of them might be big, but they're not factory farms. They're not corporate farms. They're run by your mom and your dad and your uncle and your cousin and your third cousin and your cousin once removed. Like, it's all very generational and family driven.
And let's pause there, because you're making a demarcation here. A lot of folks are attuned to the problem with factory farms and some of the pollution and even some of the problems that can happen with E. coli and other things. Now, there are protections, but there's not a lot of enforcement power, especially when you talk about the USDA. But in this case, you're saying most of the farms here in New York, they would be considered locally owned or regionally owned farms.
They are. And there's a lot of regulation that comes on the environmental level, especially with water related to municipalities. So there is federal oversight. There is state oversight. But there's a lot of county and municipal oversight. And our farms are primarily located in areas where there's fewer people. So there's more people doing multiple jobs, which means that your neighbor might also be your selectman for your town or your town supervisor or your code enforcement officer. So the interpersonal politics of running a farm also become very tricky. And so we try to help our farmers navigate that as well.
Well, I believe I read the number one foodstuff in New York is yogurt. Is that right?
Well, dairy.
Dairy.
Yep, for sure. So we are one of the leaders in dairy in the country. Probably half of our farms in New York State, at least the ones represented by the Farm Bureau, are dairy farmers. And there's a lot of consolidation in dairy. So it used to be stanchion milking, maybe had a couple hundred head of cattle that you were milking at any point. Now those farms are consolidating. There's fewer farms, but they're bigger. So it's a different operation than it was even 20 or 30 years ago. So the makeup of dairy farming has changed just in the operations. Now we have people who are milking their cows with robots. It's really amazing. The technological advancement in dairy farming is just incredible. It's unmatched in terms of other types of farming. But there's a lot of regulation around dairy farming because cows emit methane. They take a lot of water. It takes a lot of crop to feed them. So it's very highly regulated. And also, we want to make sure that dairy stays safe. There is, you know, issues related to avian flu, bird flu in dairy, not in New York State.
Yep, so
we haven't seen that yet, but it is in, I think, 12 other states throughout the country. So it's here and it's present, and there has to be regulation to make sure that our milk supplies stay safe. Right now it is. But then you get involved with federal and state and local regulations. So what we do is we kind of help farmers figure out what those regulations are, what you can do on your farm to protect it. If you do get an infected herd, what you need to do to make sure that you're not spreading it to other cows, to other herds, to other farms. So it's a lot of regulation to be a farmer. You almost have to have somebody on hand who can go through every day and look at the USDA website to make sure you're getting the most accurate information, because it changes very fast.
Let's talk a little bit about the end of session and the budget. What were you happy about when it came to legislation in the budget this year?
Yeah, we actually had a fantastic year with our wins and the things that we tried to make sure didn't pass this year. One of the big ones that we got this year finally was direct-to-consumer shipping on cider and distilled products in New York State.
Alcohol, folks.
Yeah, so now there's some parity between all of the craft spirits, all spirits made in New York State. Before wineries could ship and breweries could ship, that really came from the pandemic. They've been able to do it since the pandemic. But now all of the different types of spirits, booze, beer, wine, you can ship it all. If you go and visit, and it's been great for agritourism, because if you're going out to the Finger Lakes, or you're going out to Buffalo, or you're going somewhere where there, or Long Island, where there's a lot of craft beverage production, and you don't want to ship all that stuff home, you don't want to haul it home with you, you can now have it shipped directly to your house. And that's been pretty fantastic.
Hey, Deanna Fox of the Farm Bureau, how about Indian Ladder Farms right here in the Capital Region, which also, and this is something I find interesting that I've seen happening more and more with farms in New York, and tell me if I'm right, and that is partnering with other organizations. So DeFazio's Pizza partners with Indian Ladder. Indian Ladder has craft beer that they sell. Now there's a little area at Indian Ladder Farms for a little pizza area and cafe.
It's fantastic. So this is where you see a lot of farm diversification. We see a lot of that in our farms, where once upon a time, maybe Indian Ladder was able to just sell apples. New York State is one of the top three apple producers in the country. But people now, they don't want to go and buy their Macintosh and their Cortlands and their Empire to make a pie. They're looking for the Honeycrisp and the Fuji and the Gala and the Pink Ladies and the things that have a shorter harvest period. So you have a more concentrated group of people who are coming to pick them. It's more concentrated if you're hiring labor outside of the farm to come and pick for your harvest. But then what? What do you do from there? The money isn't there to really just only do that. So now Indian Ladder is a great example. So they make cider, but then they started making beer. So they got their farm brewer's license. They're growing hops. So they've created another commodity.
You can go and pick a number of different fruits and vegetables.
You can. And now they're working with somebody like DeFazio's, who, you know, we love from the Food Friday days.
Yes.
And bringing more people onto the farm for different reasons. But it lends a different level of, you know, regulation and different understanding of what you need to do if you're going to branch into those other kind of agritourism. From the insurance underwriting perspective, it's a different type of insurance that you then need for your farms, the regulation, when you have people on farm consuming alcohol, what that looks like. So that's really what we do. We help our farmers figure out. And it's not just farmers. We have about 12,000 members across the state who are adjacent to farming, that work in agribusiness, or people that just support farming and want to give their, you know, it's a pretty small fee, I think, for what you get as a Farm Bureau member. And we advocate tremendously for all of our members.
We're speaking with Deanna Fox. She's the new CEO of the New York Farm Bureau. And farms are that thing in our society that we sometimes take for granted, mm-hmm. where our food is coming from. Mm-hmm. And we probably shouldn't. Now, one of the things that's impacting that, I know you know this all too well, Deanna, is climate change. Mm-hmm. I mean, the flooding, irregular weather, hot spells, cold spells, and the temperature certainly affects the growing of food. So what are we finding out? Is that one of the things that is bothering farmers right now? It's hard to adjust if you can't predict the weather.
Farmers are the most resilient people that you'll ever meet, and endlessly optimistic too. Even if they're very realistic, they keep doing it. They do it year after year after year. If you're a crop grower, maybe you get 50 chances to grow something. You have 50 years in farming, 50 growing seasons, 50 chances to get it right. Livestock, it's a little different. It's more continuous, but it's still a lot of hard work and prediction modeling, essentially. You have to think about your crop rotation and if there's a field that retains more water or a field that doesn't, what you're going to plant there. And with more unpredictable weather patterns, it becomes tricky. But our farmers have seemed to figure it out and find ways to make it work. And sometimes that means just growing different types of crops or doing different things with your animals. But then there's also the human factor of that. So you have people on farms who are doing farm labor, and you have to make sure that you're protecting them. And it's pretty amazing. I mean, if I ever get to come back into a next life, I don't think it'd be a bad gig to be a dairy cow. They are in these amazing barns where they're continuously fanned and cooled, or in cold weather, they're warmed, misted. In hot weather like we've had recently, it's a pretty cool life to be a cow. So it's, you know, a lot of considerations.
And what about those that would prefer to see their animals, let's say, out in the field and not in a cage? I think that's the problem with a lot of the factory farms. We confine these animals. In the ag and markets, they're products. They're not listed as beings, sentient beings. Yeah. So we have to be very careful, don't we, when we have animals that we're trying to take care of?
Yeah. Factory farming isn't really a thing we see in New York. So we're lucky that way. Poultry farms have a very high level of biosecurity just because birds are highly susceptible to disease. So it might look like a contained unit, but it's not a factory farm. It's just very, very biosecure. On most poultry farms today, you can't even drive onto the farm without literally going through a car wash to make sure that your farm truck or your car or whatever vehicle you're in is free of any kind of outside dirt or debris that could create an issue. The same thing with dairy. You know, it is a very bucolic, romantic picture of seeing cows out on pasture, and there's still a lot of cows out on pasture. There's a huge, tremendous beef industry in New York State, and those are primarily grass-fed cows. They are out grazing on pasture, being rotated through pastures. So that still happens. I think the thing that people see more of is that derelict barn that you could tell at one point was a vibrant family farm. But it is so hard to be a farmer in New York State that you just see natural consolidation. People don't want to do it anymore. So they sell their farm, they sell their herd.
Farming, a lot of that's continues. The economics, right? So they, if they can sell their land for development, they're going to make a lot more money that way than they would to try to keep the farm going.
Which is what we see a lot of on Long Island. There's a tremendous population conflict where there's amazing, incredible farms on Long Island. There's a lot of different types of farming on Long Island, but there's such a demand to build on that very fertile, very rich farmland. And you also are met with people who seem to have unlimited funds to fight any kind of regulation to keep a farmland. So we fight a lot of battles down there.
So you'll be doing some of this stuff, right? You'll have to go down and fight those battles, organize people, get the community to respond.
Right.
And I see on your website, of course, you have a number of ways that people can, that are in farming, can get help, can seek help. Tell us a little bit about the services you provide to farmers.
Yeah. So the Farm Bureau is unique because it's a federated operation. So there's 52 different county farm bureaus in New York that operate essentially as their own organizations, and they filter up to New York State. New York State Farm Bureau filters up to American Farm Bureau Federation, which is actually 51 because we include Puerto Rico. So on the county level, that's where you have a lot of access to like your municipal help. Your boards on the county level are able to help. You're able to talk more with your neighbors to mobilize people to make sure that your voices are heard when it comes to situations like different types of code enforcement or changes in water districting or ag districting on a county and municipal level. And then on the state, we're able to provide our public policy team, which helps understand and provide a little bit more in-depth resources for how to take on those battles and fight them on a very clear legislative level, making sure that there's legislation and bills put in place or vetoed in New York State to benefit our farmers.
Here's a question you're going to love. Who's better on the Farm Bureau issues, the Republicans or the Democrats?
Traditionally, it's been Republicans, but we have many Democratic friends right now. I mean, New York is so heavily Democratic that I think there has been a change in Democratic representation outside of very urban areas. So we've seen some Democratic officials start to understand more and work with us more. Often you'll hear on a committee meeting, you know, what does the Farm Bureau think on this? Have you asked the Farm Bureau yet to, you know, understand what it is? Because we're the ones they're talking to farmers. We're not the Department of Ag and Markets. We're not a state entity. Even though the name Bureau might make people think that we're a government organization, we're not. We're independent. We're the people that are actually going out in the field and meeting with our farmers to understand what they need. And all of our policy is developed by our members. We don't set the political agenda. Our members meet annually with delegates, and they set the agenda, and that's what we act on.
I should know this. Is it a for-profit membership organization or a not-for-profit?
We have different entities within the organization, and some are for-profit and some are non-profit. So we have a foundation. We have our public policy team that operates. It's kind of its own thing.
Mm-hmm. The members pay a fee. Yeah.
Yep. And then we also sell workers' compensation insurance.
Marijuana, cannabis.
Yeah.
This has been one of the worst rollouts in the country, at least if you are looking at all the analysis like we have. And I'm sure you've been keeping up on that because, I mean, at one point we could see this as a boon to farmers. Talk about diversifying your crop, something that people were all excited about. You know, of course, you have recreational, you have hemp, CBD or THC. Let's talk a little bit about cannabis and what you've heard from farmers on this. I know many of them were very upset. I mean, they had grown this crop and had it ready, and it was sitting there.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. So it was a horrendous rollout by the Office of Cannabis Management.
No pun intended.
Yeah. No, that would be a roll up, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
But thankfully, the one good thing that happened that Farm Bureau fought really hard for was for cannabis to be classified as a commodity crop in New York State.
Which and that happened, right?
It did. That passed. So that means that it's now recognized as a product which can qualify for different protections and be serviced through other functions of the state for growing capacity and for production distribution. It's regulated, not really, it's not really regulated in a different way, but it's classified differently, which allows for more opportunity, which is good because we do have farms. We have farm members who, you know, for decades have been growing organic vegetables and had an opportunity to, you know, allocate some of their farmland and their operation to cannabis and were completely left out to hang. You know, to say that farms almost went bankrupt because of it is not exaggeration. That nearly happened.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you can't sort of hold out the carrot and then not have
A robust
support.
Stick.
Yeah. So, but the issue for me is the money, right? Because in the federal government, it's still not changed. And you can't put your money in a federally insured bank. So what does this mean for the farmers, you know, when they sell that crop? Do those proceeds have to go under the couch? I mean, how does that work?
Now that it's a commodity crop, there's different regulations in terms of the finance, too. So it means that we haven't yet seen this trickle into banking, although we have had many conversations with various banks and they have been preparing for this. They're ready to launch that whenever they can.
And there's legislation on the federal level for this.
There
is. To allow the banks to accept proceeds.
Right.
Legal proceeds.
Mm-hmm. So now people, because of the commodity crop classification, are able to sell like they would sell. They still have to follow protocol on where they can sell it, in what mean they can sell it, what parts of the plant they can harvest and sell. But it becomes a more viable business practice because of commodity crop classification on actually making that come to fruition, on having a viable farm focused on cannabis.
If you follow it forward, if the federal government approves this ability for the proceeds to go to banks and they allow now for research into the medicinal properties of the plant, you could see where farmers could have a very, very valuable crop if there's breakthroughs in medicine.
And we also see a unique opportunity because of the way that cannabis is regulated in terms of how you grow it, and also the pricing structure for cannabis grown outdoors versus cannabis grown in a controlled environment like a greenhouse, that there's an opportunity for urban agriculture related to cannabis. You need a lot of area in order to grow it. But if you have an old warehouse that you can turn into a controlled environment agriculture facility, you could grow cannabis there and you could have a robust agriculture industry within cities because of cannabis. You can do that with other produce and products now. But I think the intrigue or the mystique around marijuana and that it's such a trendy, hot item to talk about right now will kind of push that forward. I think we'll see more urban agriculture because of it. And when you get farming into traditionally governed Democratic areas, traditionally governed by Democrats, you see more people becoming familiar with what agriculture is. And it benefits farmers across the state and therefore across the country.
I wonder if a part of your public face forward with the Farm Bureau and you getting out into the communities will be encouraging people to grow gardens themselves. I mean, the idea of sustainable agriculture and each and every one of us has the power to grow food.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's true. And there's still a lot of places in New York and throughout the country that are technically food deserts. And even if you have a little bit, you know, maybe you have some extra zucchini or some extra tomatoes that you grew in your garden that you can share, that makes a huge difference on the availability of fresh produce, fresh food, nutritious food for people everywhere in the state, which is also a goal of Farm Bureau, to make sure that everybody gets good, nutritious food grown in New York.
Yeah, we'd love to see some that can't afford get some of that fresh food as well, more of it at least. And, you know, how are farm shares doing? My wife and I belong to a farm share. We get our fresh vegetables from an area farm. How big is that across the state?
Yeah, it's interesting to see how CSA agriculture has grown and farm shares have grown and the spinoffs from that. We have one farm in particular in Saratoga County that started as a CSA program, and then they started making pizzas on their farm, and then they started delivering, you know, pre-made meals essentially. And now they're in multiple states and they have contracts with huge insurance companies and medical companies to, you know, bring this food that they make. So something as small as a farm share on maybe an acre, you can grow a lot of produce on an acre of land, has had this amazing economic impact and entrepreneurial impact in helping people really develop a livelihood for themselves just because of that farm share. And that's been pretty impactful.
And of course, you're buying local. You're spreading the money locally into the community and supporting the community agriculture.
Absolutely. Which is something that we try to remind legislators about when we focus on our agenda for the year, is that farming isn't just these huge commodities. It's not huge dairy farms. It's not huge commodity crops like soybeans or wheat or oats. It's the little guy too. It's the person who still is milking only 100 head of cattle or growing on 2 or 3 acres of land or doing just this one specialty crop that they're really passionate about. Those people matter too. And so they need to be mindful of those people when they're developing policy that will impact the future of agriculture in New York State.
Let's turn to a bill that you were happy that didn't pass, that you did not support. And this comes right into the dairy part because there was a lot of, well, let's just say there was a little hyperbole in terms of cheese slices and the individually wrapped cheese slices. Mm. Now, this is the repackaging act, right, to reduce plastic waste. Mm-hmm. And this one you did not support. How come?
Well, we definitely feel like there needs to be less plastic in the waste stream. You know, any rational person, I think, would feel that way. But the problem with the bill is that it was written not for the small farms that it was going to end up impacting. It was written in consideration of like the Amazons of the world and the Sephoras of the world and focusing on these huge corporations which have money to truly impact the recycling system in this country. A small milk producer who's selling to a few stores and bottling their own milk, processing their own milk, or making their own yogurt will be completely bankrupted by this bill. It's not practical for the way that farms operate in New York State, and it doesn't incentivize better recycling programs. If you're only essentially putting the onus on the producer for taking these products out of the waste stream, and it wasn't just plastics either. This affected anything that could be recycled. So our wineries, by and large, our wineries would have been wiped out by this bill. It was really amazing the lack of forethought that was put into this bill.
So is it just the sheer cost of switching their operation to not include plastics? Is that what that is?
Well, it wasn't just that. It was every step from the minute you put your product into a plastic or glass package all the way up to when the final consumer uses that and puts it back into the waste stream. The cost ended up being borne by these small producers. Maybe Amazon can afford it, but I know that a small dairy farmer in Clinton County definitely cannot.
And as I believe it was Deborah Glick, maybe it was Liz Krueger in the legislature said, the federal law in some cases would supersede the state law. So you would still see individually wrapped cheese in the market. So people get confused about a lot of this stuff, though. Yep. They don't understand it.
Just on that point, too, I think the way that bills are commonly written or the way that they're presented makes it sound like something you should get behind. Yes, we do want less plastic in the waste stream. We want less plastic associated with our food. But when you get down to the nuts and bolts of it,
devil's in the details.
Poorly written and does not consider the people who it's really going to impact.
Well, and I've harped on this for years that, you know, most legislators never get to read the full bills.
They don't.
that are written. Their staff looks at them. You know, they get the gist of it. But as you said, who could be against reducing plastic in the waste stream? But how you get to that point is the issue. Yeah.
When they write a bill that seems to make a lot of sense and doesn't completely decimate our small farms, we will be behind it.
All right. I will give you a minute because that's all we have. Okay. I know this farm bill is a big deal for you guys. Yeah. You support it. What's it coming up in September?
September.
Okay. Yeah. So tell us why.
Well, there hasn't been a farm bill since 2018, which means we've lived through a pandemic and a global recession and skyrocketing inflation since then. So the farm bill, as it's currently written, doesn't do much to ensure that the cost of input for your farm matches the output. We've had some movement on milk pricing, but milk pricing is antiquated and doesn't represent what it actually takes to run a dairy farm adequately. But beyond that, it doesn't put America at the forefront of agricultural production and innovation in this world. We're continuously being outpaced by China and Europe in terms of technology and research and protection of our farms. And I can't imagine a world in which America isn't the top producer for a lot of our crops and the leading source of research and innovation in agriculture. And the Farm Bill needs to engage in that and make sure that we can be the top dog when it comes to those matters.
She is Deanna Fox, the new CEO of the New York Farm Bureau. That's what,
NYFB.org.
NYFB.org. Head there, check their website out, and you'll learn a lot more than we were able to today. And I hope that will mean that you will come back again.
I would love
maybe
to.
Maybe before September, and we can talk a little bit about that Farm Bill in more detail.
Let's hope. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.
Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.